That's great. Excellent. All right, so we're going to look at three other mitzvot from Parshat Bo, and we're going to...
123.
Mm-hmm, and I wasn't sure if we would do four or not, but I'm going to separate out the last one for next week. Well, we'll just look at one. So this week we're going to look at sanctifying the firstborn in the land of Israel, redeeming a firstborn donkey, and the mitzvah, sadly, of breaking the neck of an unredeemed firstborn donkey. Oh. Yeah, right? Right. Yeah, so that's an excellent question. Donkeys? What do they have against donkeys? So let's look at that right this very minute.
It's a Republican conspiracy.
Those Republicans, even back then. So, okay, so there's two concepts here that we want to look at. And we do want to look at the donkeys because that's a very interesting thought. But let's start with this. So the mitzvah, number 18, is to sanctify the firstborn. That is, of all the young that are born first, every newborn that is the first to have emerged from a womb, whether human or animal, the males are holy to the eternal God. As it is stated, consecrate to me every firstborn, whatever is the first to leave the womb among the Israelite people, both of man and of animals. It is mine. Which means only domestic animals, the ox, the sheep, the goat, but not wild species. And out of all the unclean, non-kosher domestic animals, only the donkey is included in this precept.
Why?
So it's interesting. So why? So we're going to look at that.
Jesus rode on a donkey or something.
So it's an interesting... It's an interesting concept,
no,
the whole...
Mashiach is coming on a donkey.
Right, the donkey concept. What is the donkey concept? Right, which is why Jesus was riding on a donkey, because he's trying to be Mashiach.
I see.
Yeah, right.
Obviously, I didn't have any I was making.
So a donkey is often used in parables, because the word for donkey is chamor, donkey, and chomer is physical. Physical stuff. Chomer is material. Chamor, chomer. It's the same word. Just the vav is in a different place. And as we know, vavs can appear and disappear.
I'm sorry.
Chamor, chet, mem, vav, resh, is donkey.
Right.
And chomer, chet, vav, mem, resh, is material. Physical material. Stuff to make stuff out of. You go to Home Depot to buy chomer to make your shed. Or you can go to Joann's and buy chomer to make a dress. Right? Material stuff. Our bodies are chomer. And our soul is spiritual. So we are a combination of the physical and the spiritual. So since our bodies are stuff, it's often, and we can call our body chomer, material, so it's often compared to a chamor, a donkey. So where the rider has to direct the donkey, the soul has to direct the body. And where a donkey can be very stubborn, so can a body be very stubborn and not really want to be directed, it turns out. Right, soul might be saying, get out of bed, and donkey might be saying, uh-uh. That's right, I'm staying right here. Chomer and chamor.
Chamor.
Chamor is a donkey. Now, for anybody who wants to get extra confused, and I'm not sure where this comes from, actually, is chumrah, which is a stricture. So chamor, not chamor, chamor is strict. So just to add to your vocabulary there. So chamor is strict, chumrah is a stricture, chomer is material, and chamor, not chamor, chamor is a donkey. So I think for donkey the dot would be on top of the vav, and for strict the dot would be in the middle of the vav, but it'd be the same place in the word. So... Does that have to do with donkey? I'm not really sure, but just adding into your vocabulary words there. Okay, so we have this concept then of sanctifying the firstborn of the... So let's go back away from donkeys for a minute and back to firstborn. So sanctifying firstborns. Actually, let's just finish the donkey thought because the firstborn males. Let's finish the donkey thought just for a minute. So let's look on page 126. This is a very interesting... So the concept of sanctifying the firstborn we're going to talk about at length, but the donkey particularly. So let's look at that for just a minute. Let's see. So about the firstborn and the firstling of a donkey, we will explain, he says. But the reason that I want to look at page 126 is because of the note, note number 19. So it talks, one of the reasons that we sanctify the firstborn, and only one of the reasons, is to remember that we are the firstborn of God, but we were saved, and the firstborn in Egypt were sacrificed. So the firstborn in Egypt, but they're also compared to donkeys. So this note, it's interesting. As it's stated in Scripture, "For all the firstborn among the Israelites, both of man and of beast, are mine. On the day that I struck down every firstborn in the land of Egypt, I consecrated them to me." So that's the basic reason why firstborns are consecrated. Hang on for just a second. So that says in Numbers 8:17 that because he struck down, the firstborn is consecrated, and he struck down the negative ones and he saved the positive ones. But all of them belong to God. I.e., as it were, when all the firstborn in Egypt died in the last of the 10 plagues, the Israelite firstborn, man and beast, were kept safe by divine grace. Oh, this isn't the note I wanted. "And they are thus placed for all time in a special relationship of sanctification to him." Where is that note? I think it's on page 130, which I didn't photocopy for you.
So let me ask just a question. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for the note.
Mm-hmm.
The last plague struck down all the male, I thought it was all the male firstborn humans, but was it all the male firstborn?
All firstborns.
Uh-huh.
Oh. All firstborns. Yeah. All firstborns.
And probably
never knew it, so it wasn't something
they
to
lost
remember.
Their children and they lost
their animals
too.
Well, they had a lot of animals lost already.
About the children. I don't know why. I mean, I may have known it right now. Maybe I never knew it.
It was interesting. I asked Rabbi Nussbaum because my granddaughter asked me this at Passover time, because she is the firstborn. Was that also the girls? And I said, no, it's only the male. But then I wanted to make sure I told her everything. So I checked with Rabbi Nussbaum. He came back. He said, I think it's male. He came back to me and he said, no.
What?
Firstborn daughter?
So they really did the firstborn everything?
That's
really?
What he said, that there is
the
that
firstborn Egyptian.
Right, not right. Yeah, the firstborn.
Oh, really?
That's
well, the whole
that's
thing was the prophecy
with.
That it would be a male who would rise up to usurp him. So that's why he.
Huh. That's why Pharaoh killed the males.
Right.
But God.
Equal thing.
Like a measure thing. I don't remember.
No, God killed all the firstborns, which caused a lot of.
I'll ask him why he came back to me with that, because he is a very careful and meticulous.
Right. So what I learned is that the firstborn males today fast. There's a fast of the firstborn,
right. Mm-hmm.
The day of the Seder, meaning the day before, whereas that night is the Seder.
Right.
Women firstborns also fast then, but it's a much lighter fast. So they are required to do that fast, but they can get out of it very easily. So, well, everybody gets out of it, basically.
Okay,
you make a siyum. No, they make a siyum that morning that the men attend, and then if they eat in the siyum, then they don't have to fast for the rest
right.
of the day. Girls, women, just have to have something from the siyum. So Avi used to go daven and bring home a cookie for Elisheva. So Elisheva that morning couldn't eat until she'd have that cookie, because that was her fast of the firstborn. She just had to have something from the siyum. Right, so, and when I asked if I should be fasting, since I'm firstborn in my family, I was told no, because I'm not firstborn in my family. Because, really, Yitzhak or Yishmael would be firstborn in my family. Right, so, because I'm a convert, right. So I'm physically firstborn to my biological parents, but I'm not a firstborn, I don't have status of firstborn.
So. Well, you know, if you go back and read that verse on 123:18, you read it right from the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
It says, "Consecrate to me every firstborn, whatever is the first to leave the womb among the Israelite people, both of man and of beast." So
not men.
Man could be
a person. No, of man, not men.
Right, that's what,
right.
That's what she said.
It's of man, so firstborn.
Born of a person.
Yeah.
Right, so it is, it's interesting, because it's the firstborn. Let's see.
Of human.
Right.
No, so I think that's not, of course it's of human. That's not the question. The question is, could it be firstborn of a man, or could it only be the firstborn of a womb? Meaning there could be two firstborns in the couple, right? So there's the woman's firstborn, the first issue of her womb. Right. Then let's say she gets divorced or whatever, and she marries somebody else who never had children. So is Malka Moreno's baby a firstborn? It's her father's first baby, but it's not her mother's first baby.
I would say that goes.
Is that a firstborn? Right? So that's what I'm saying. That's a question.
That's another way to look at what that says.
But it's firstborn as a Jew.
Right, but it's not still not peter rechem.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't have to be firstborn, because if somebody has a miscarriage or an abortion before their first child is born and their first child's a son, there's no pidyon haben, because not the first issue of the womb.
It's not.
No.
Because there has been something previous.
Right, okay. Right. Even if it's a miscarriage. Right. So then it's not firstborn.
Because it says among the Israelite people.
So right, so.
So it sort of specifies men and women.
Well, so it's humankind. So it's the man and beast.
Obligated.
To what? So it's not saying obligated to.
Well, consecrate to me every firstborn.
But it doesn't say females necessarily.
So this is where.
Let's look at the end of 18, where it says. Well, so it always says how to do it. So let's see the root of the precept, and it says how to do it also. Some laws of this precept. So it's one page 125 at the bottom paragraph.
125.
Mm-hmm. Some laws of this precept are, and then we're going to have to. Here's all the questions. At which place it is to be ritually slain and eaten? Until which time is it a religious duty to eat it? The matter of blemishes, which disqualify it, which is a permanent blemish? Who all these different things, which learned scholars fit to render decisions about its blemishes, the law of the firstborn animal belonging to two Israelite partners or to one Jewish and non-Jewish partner, in which instance, so all these questions, the question of a firstborn by cesarean section, a firstborn of uncertain sex or hermaphrodite, these and other details are clarified in Talmud tractate Bechorot. Bechorot. Bechor, coming from firstborn. Right, so... So all these questions, is it male, is it female, is it of the father, is it of the mother, does it have to be of both? Like all those questions clarifying what this means, they would all be discussed there. So that's not really our purpose right now, is to understand how to do the mitzvah in this particular case, but rather the principle that underlies the mitzvah. So the consecration of the firstborn. But let's finish the donkey for a minute. Now where did that go? 134. And those who have photocopies don't have this. It's so much photocopying. I don't want to give you everything, unfortunately, because the main principle that we're looking at is in what I copied for you, and the other ones are shorter. But there is this note. So this is interesting. So redeeming the firstborn donkey. So this is really Mitzvah 22, which I'll read to you since not everybody has the book. The mitzvah is to redeem the male young of a donkey that was the first to be born, as it is stated. Every firstling of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. So this mitzvah of the redemption of the firstborn donkey is not to bring the donkey to the Kohen, but to bring a lamb to the Kohen. The lamb then becomes the Kohen's property, but it's not holy, meaning it can be eaten even if the Kohen's not in holiness, right? Because the Kohen usually can only eat it after he's gone to the mikveh at a certain time of day, if it's holy food. So if this becomes non-holy food, it can be eaten at any time. He could share it with his friends. Right, but other things like trumot, he can't share with his friends. Only Kohens can eat that.
And this is a male young of a donkey. This
right, so here is saying specifically male.
Okay.
Right, and then the person gets to keep their donkey.
Oh, right.
Substantially, it means that an Israelite would take a lamb and give it to a Kohen as redemption for a firstling of a donkey, for it belongs originally to the eternal Lord, for the reason we have written above, which we have yet to look at, and he gave it to the Kohen. Therefore, the Israelite redeems it from him, for the eternal Lord wanted it to be ransomed for a lamb. So here's an interesting thing. At the root of this precept, so third paragraph, if you have the book, at the root of this precept lies the purpose that Jews should remember forever the miracle which God wrought for them at the departure from Egypt, that he slew all the Egyptians firstborn, who were likened to donkeys. As it says in Scripture, but this is in Ezekiel, in the land of Egypt, whose flesh is as the flesh of donkeys, as it is written in Exodus 13:14-15. Okay, so the land. So what is this flesh of donkeys? So now we're going to look at this note, page 134. Said the Holy One, on account of my love of the people of Israel, I changed the order of things. How? I wrote in my Torah that a donkey should be redeemed with a lamb. As it is stated, the firstling of a donkey you shall be redeemed with a lamb. And I did not do so, but redeemed a lamb with a donkey. The Egyptians are likened to donkeys, as it is stated, whose flesh is as the flesh of donkeys. And the Israelites are called a lamb, as it is stated, Israel is a scattered sheep. And I slew the firstborn of the Egyptians and consecrated the firstborn of the Israelites, as it is stated, for all the firstborn among the Israelites are mine, both of man and of beast. On the day that I smote all the firstborn from the land of Egypt, I consecrated them for myself. So that's interesting.
Ezekiel? No, that was...
No, so that particular passage that I just read was Numbers. Numbers 8:17. But this concept that so the equation of Egyptians with donkeys is Ezekiel.
So that's where we get the
scriptural reference for that equation is in Ezekiel. But the concept is there during Exodus.
Well, then, if only the firstborn male of the donkey was sacrificed, then wouldn't it be only the firstborn male of the Egyptians?
Right, so now it's saying all firstborn and donkeys. All firstborn kosher animals belong to Hashem. And donkeys are not kosher, so they're a separate mitzvah.
Right.
So all firstborn animals plus firstborn donkeys.
Male.
Are consecrated to God.
Right, but going back to the question of if it was firstborn males or male and female.
Right.
The Exodus, if the Egyptians are like...
Right, so I'm not sure. Would
be
good.
Male?
Yeah, so I think it is just the males that were killed, the male firstborns. I'm pretty sure it wasn't the female firstborns. But it's still the energy. But there's still an energy of firstbornness to a firstborn female.
You probably researched it before you said that.
Right, so we'll look into that further.
After a while.
So we'll look into that further. It'll be interesting just to see where the sources are, just so we know that. Right, okay, so let's go back then. Okay, so now, so we see this mitzvah of...
I have heard about women having to either do the siyum or
have something to eat from the siyum. Yeah,
that.
So that is a thing, right? So there is an energy of firstbornness in the women, mm-hmm. in which they also have to do something mm-hmm. to not fast that day, or something to recognize the fast of that day.
You say, or who has time to eat anyway?
Yeah, I have time. Let's say you don't redeem the donkey, or you don't want to redeem the donkey for some reason, then you're supposed to kill it, behead it. You don't have this, page 137. So the mitzvah quickly I'll read, to behead the firstling donkey if one does not want to redeem it, as it is stated, and if you will not redeem it, then you shall behead it. In substance, it means that one kills the firstborn young of a donkey if he does not wish to ransom it. The Eternal Lord decreed that he should have no benefit from it since he did not redeem it, even... any benefit from the carcass is forbidden to him. So let's say you live far up in the north and there's no Kohanim within miles of you north of Israel, because this is only in the land of Israel, right? And you just don't feel like making that long trek to redeem it with a lamb. You can, but you have this donkey. What are you supposed to do with it? You can just kill it, the firstborn. You don't have to. So that's a separate mitzvah. But the mitzvah, so it's a mitzvah to kill it if you don't redeem it. But the mitzvah of redeeming it takes precedence.
That's weird. Because usually there's nothing wasteful, and that's just
right.
Waste.
It does seem like it's wasteful, right?
Mm-hmm. As opposed to just a sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
which also
right.
is
well, and if you but they eat the sacrifice.
Right. I mean, but there's more use.
Right. Right. But here it seems wasteful. Right. Here you're not redeeming it. You're just killing an animal.
And you can't eat it.
Right. And you can't get any benefit from the carcass. You can't even make the carcass into shoes.
Use the skin.
You can't use the leather. Right. Right. You're not supposed to feed it to your animals. Right, right. No. Benefit from the carcass is forbidden him. So not feeding it to your animals.
Nothing.
Yeah, just dead.
That does seem wonderful.
Yeah. Right, it does.
So
that's a good question.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. But that is the mitzvah, to break the neck. Yeah, I know. It's
well,
very sad.
Well, there you go, then. Yeah.
It
behooves you to redeem.
Yes.
That's added incentive. Mm-hmm. It is. Significant added incentive.
Mm-hmm. Right, that you should redeem it.
if we shoo a mother bird from a nest.
Right.
So not to let her stress her in taking up the eggs and to kill a baby donkey with the mother there ready to nurse and all of that.
Right. Seems very sad.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
But it's not a kosher animal, so.
Right, they can't eat it. It doesn't matter. You still can. You're still not allowed to cause pain to non-kosher animals. Right. Yeah. There is a.
That's almost what it seems like. It's like, well, it's not a kosher animal, so we can just be wasteful.
No. So it's not that we can be wasteful. So there is. It's tied into this mitzvah that you have to sanctify the firstborn. So if you're not giving it to God, you can't have it. You know, it's kind of like that Shel Silverstein poem. Mm-hmm. You know, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep, and if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my toys to break, so none of the other kids can get them. That's Jill Silverstein's poem. So the idea here is, if you're not giving it to where it's supposed to go, you don't get it. Either. So the mitzvah here is to say, either which way, you can't have this donkey. Don't tell me the Kohanim are too far away from you, because either which way, you don't get it. Either you're going to redeem it, or you're going to kill it. That's up to you. But either which way, you don't get it.
So if you redeem it with a sheep, you do get the donkey.
Yes. If you redeem it with a sheep.
You can't have the donkey if you get a sheep.
Yes, that's correct. Right. That's correct.
You might have to go 300 miles with your lamb to the temple.
Right. But probably in the third temple, you just do a wire transfer money. You just send over here.
PayPal.
Yeah, PayPal. That's right. There'll be PayPal sacrifices.
Okay.
We should patent that right now, so we'll be all positioned.
I think you should get
Holy
think you
Temple
should reserve,
PayPal.
I think you should reserve the domain name.
Sacrificepaypal.org.
All right, great. Yeah. Oh, that'll be great.
That'd be PayPal sacrifice.
Right. So anyway, because it does say that you can't, if you don't have a sheep, let's say the sheep are low on the count or whatever, you don't have access to one, you can give the amount of the sheep the money. So and that it just says the amount, what that is. And since the market price fluctuates, so it says a wealthy person or a generous person should give one selah, however much that is, and it says in here a niggardly person half, and I think a poor person less, something like that. Anyway, there's three different amounts that you can give. So.
And you also could all, if you had nothing, you could give a dove, right?
Well, the nothing for a dove is, no, in this case not. In this case, it's the cash, right? It's either the sheep or the cash, right? Because you can't have nothing because you have a donkey, right? So you could sell your donkey, I guess, but maybe you can't even sell it until you redeem it.
You
might have to mortgage it to buy the sheep to redeem. Who knows?
You can rent it. Maybe you can.
Maybe you can rent it. Maybe some. Yeah, I don't know exactly. That's a good question, and that would probably be discussed in Talmud Tractate Bechorot. Okay, so now let's look at this concept of firstborn, firstlings in the land of Israel. So sanctifying the firstborn. All right. So let's look on page 125, the root of the precept. Okay. So at the root of the precept, this is the third paragraph.
Where are you? What page again?
Page 125, at third paragraph. At the root of the precept lies the reason that the Eternal Lord wished to grant us the merit to perform a mitzvah with the first of our fruit, in order to know that everything is His, and a man has nothing in the world but what the Eternal Lord allots him in His kindness. This will be understood when one sees that after a man has toiled through many labors and gone through many troubles in his world, and the time has come when fruit is yielded, and the first of his fruit is beloved to him as the apple of his eye. He gives it at once to the Holy One. Blessed is he. He deprives himself of his possession, making it the possession of his Creator. So that's number one, and here's a second reason. It is also given to us to observe in order to remember the great miracle that the Eternal Lord did for us in relation to the firstborn of Egypt, that he slew them and saved us from their hand. So two different reasons. The second and subordinate reason being to remember that miracle. But the first reason to remember that everything belongs to God. And even what we work for, what we earn, what we made happen, what we made manifested, actually all belongs to God. And so the first of our fruits we give back to God to always remind that to always remind ourselves that everything belongs to God, even what we created. And so we have this concept of the head of things. And we say on Rosh Hashanah when we have the head of the fish. And I've always done that with candy heads, mm-hmm. candy fish heads. And last year for the first time, hello, I got a smoked white fish. So we had a tiny little fish head. But this year on Rosh Hashanah, I went to the Aleskis. And they had a fish head on the table. I mean, like a gazunta fish head. Huge. You know, because like with our little smoked white fish head, which was, I could handle the head of a smoked white fish on the table. Like that wasn't so bad. It was a head. I like smoked white fish. There wasn't enough meat in it, though, really, for a few people to take a bite if you wanted to take a bite. So I was wondering, like, how does that work? How does, like, if you want everybody at the table to have a piece of the head, how do you do that? Well, I learned from the Aleskis. But if you have a fish head the size of a horse head on the table, a big gazunta thing that needs a whole platter, it was nasty looking. But it was a whole fish head, and it was enough for each night, whoever wanted of the 20 people around their table could take a bite of fish head. Yeah, so when we do that, the whole point of describing this, when we do that, we say we should be like the head and not the tail. So what is a head? Let's think about a head.
For, thinking.
Well, it's a thinking thing, but it's also the thing that leads, right? It's the one, so we Jews lead. The tail follows, right? People don't walk backwards. Animals don't walk backwards. They walk forwards with their head first and their tail last. So it's not just... It's not just, and it also is, we should lead with our thoughts and not with our material, right? But it's also that we should be the leaders and not the followers. That's the role of the Jew. We should be the leaders. So there's a whole concept of what the head is in leadership. And so that's why I wanted to, well, in leadership and the concept of head. So that's why I want to look at this Rav Hirsch with you and the Rashi on the word Reshit, Breshit. So we see Breshit. Look at your word Breshit. Take your Hirsch Chumash sheets that look like this. And look at the word on the top of the page that says Breshit. And put your finger over the bet and your finger over the Yud Taf. And what do you see?
Rosh.
The root of the word Breshit is Rosh. Head. Okay? So that's what we want to look at a little bit is what does this Rosh mean, right, or Reshit. So the first thing that we have to know, so let's look at our Rashi sheets. Oh, the Rashi sheets, which is the bottom of the stack, photocopied in a gimpy way. So it's the bottom of, yeah. So it's you're not going to be able to read it at all.
Okay, then.
So I'll just read to you.
The one on the right?
It's both. I really wanted both. And I just did it wrong because the book is too big and it misread it and everything.
Gotcha.
So, but Rashi says, because the formulation is weird, so I'll read you. It's important to hear this Rashi. Breshit bara Elokim. That's all we need to know, first of all. Breshit. In the beginning of, Rabbi Yitzchak said, okay, forget that part. He's really saying, why should it start with this? It really should start with the first mitzvah that we looked at last week. It doesn't make any sense, right? It doesn't make any sense. It should start with this. But where does it say in here? He says, this verse doesn't say anything except darshani. Interpret me. So he's saying, this first verse of the Torah is crying out, interpret me, interpret me. Because this word makes no sense. If you understand the grammar of it, reshit, with a taf at the end, is smichut. Smichut means it should be connected to something. So I'll give you an example. Simcha is happiness or a happy occasion, right? Simchat Beit HaShoeva, you've all heard of a Simchas Beit HaShoeva, right? That's the parties that we have Sukkos time. So those are Sukkos Chol HaMoed parties. Today is just a party. But really, those parties that were very, very festive in old Jerusalem, ancient Jerusalem, were the parties that celebrated the drawing of the water, the festival of drawing of the water. But just listen to the word, Simchat Beit HaShoeva. It's the Simcha. So really what that means is Simcha Shel Beit HaShoeva. Instead of saying Simcha Shel Beit HaShoeva, you can just say Simchat Beit HaShoeva. It's a contraction, Smichut, but it's a possessive contraction specifically. So you can't have Breshit without something after it that it should be connected to. And it's not here. Here you just have in the beginning of... And that's what it is. In the beginning of, God created the heavens and the earth. It's not in the beginning. It's in the beginning of. So it is saying, interpret me, because in the beginning of?
What?
Right. What? In the beginning of what? It's a huge question here. So Rashi and other commentators have a field day with this. So it says, so that, this is the second, Breishit Bara. In the beginning of God's creation, the verse says nothing but expound me. The verse demands to be expounded. It is to be understood as the rabbis of blessed memory expanded it. Bishvil HaTorah, Shenikret Reishit Darko. Uvishvil Yisrael, Shenikru Reishit Tivuata. Ve'im Batel Efaresh. Okay, so the way he first expounds it, he says, is for the sake of, in this case, and it's not usually for the sake of, right? The bet is usually in, with, or of. So here it's saying for the sake of. Interpret this bet as for the sake of. And then you can read, for the sake of the Reishit, Hashem created the heavens and the earth. For the sake of the Reishit. Okay, so now what's Reishit? Okay, we got for the sake of Reishit. But what does Reishit mean? So there's a few different Reishits. So the first one is the Torah. The Torah is the first leading thing. So for the sake of the Torah, that's called Reishit Darko, the beginning of God's way. And for the sake of Israel, that's called Reishit Tivuata, the first of his crop. So the first of God's crop. And there's a few other Reishits, and we see other Reishits. So in this case, it's for the sake of Reishit, for the sake of the Torah, and for the sake of Israel is the world created. And then it talks about other Reishits. The Reishit of the dough is the challah. When we take challah, that's called Reishit Arisa, the beginning of the dough. And then Reishit is also Bikurim, the first of the crops, the first of the tree crops, or the first of the first of the field. So those are the Bikurim, that's also called Reishit. So we see now that Reishit means first of something. So then we have to ask, so first in something that leads, because we talked about Rosh being something that leads, right? So how do we put together first of something and leading? It's not just that the head goes first, but there's actually a leading quality there. So the quality here is okay, so let's make the question a little deeper before we answer it, or before we talk about it, right? So there's two things, right? But the question is, how are we the Reishit? How are Jews the Reishit? We're not God's first nation. We're God's first pick. But we're not God's first product, right? If a miscarriage means that the next one coming out of the womb is not the first, how could we possibly be the first one? We're for sure not the first ones to come out of the womb of the earth. You've got Adam and Eve, and then you got the world destroyed, and then you got Noah and Naaman, their three sons and wives, and all the nations that came from them. And only after all that did the Jews come around. We're not the first nation.
So we're the first to accept God is the one true God.
Mm-hmm, good. But we're not the firstborn. But that's good. Excellent. So we are the first to accept, as a group, God's oneness and the leadership quality of bringing the oneness into the world. Right? So, excellent. Let's look at our blue sheets for a minute. At the words in Hebrew. Okay? So I wrote here... Sorry. No vowels. Bahor, Bahor, Nivchar, Bahor, and Bikurim. Okay, so the first and the third, Bahor and Bahor.
Bahor.
So Bahor, the first one, is chosen. Nivchar, we are the Am HaNivchar, the chosen people.
So it's people?
No. Nivchar is chosen. And Bahor is also chosen. There's two different forms of it. Two different ways to write that. But the important thing to see here is the bet chet resh, as opposed to the bet chaf resh of word number three, which is pronounced the same. They're homophones, bless you. Bahor and Bahor. The bet chaf resh means firstborn. Bahor is the firstborn. Bikurim, you see it's the same root there, bet, so skip the yud and skip the vav and the yud mem at the end, which makes it plural, but it's the same root, right, as firstborn is firstfruits. Bikurim.
Because of the kaf.
Right. It's the same root word. So that's first. So the bet chaf resh is firstness. Bet chet resh is chosenness. Or best,
and it's
in a way.
Things that it's pronounced just the same.
It's pronounced just the same, but it's not for nothing.
Right.
Not for nothing. I know you're used to random coincidences in Judaism all the time where words just, you know, you never know what they mean. And yet, in this case, it does mean something. So,
so does, if you look closely at this, you know, we always have this, as a people, we have this problem with chosenness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of our mantle of
who chose who, God or we.
Right.
Well, in addition to that, does it make you special, or does it? Are you not special?
Or is it
more
of an obligation?
Right. Mm-hmm. Other people hate us for it.
Hate us for it, right?
Well, because it sounds very elitist.
Yeah.
You don't know what it really means.
Right. You know, we struggle with that.
Right. We struggle with the chosenness. I think we probably struggle more than any generation ever has struggled with that concept, because we're so egalitarian in this country to say anybody is special. Can't be said.
Can't
like the Special Olympics. Everybody's a winner because everybody's special. Right? So everybody is special, and yet...
We're special. special,
right.
Special,
or specialist. Right. So in a way, you could put it that way. We're specialists, but we're specialists in bringing the whole world into a relationship with God. That's what we're supposed to be doing. So, and we are chosen for that, and we have been given specific tools for that. So it's very difficult in this egalitarian society to say, yes, somebody is created differently and has different skills. Now, you could say it in the negative. It's okay to make a movie that says white men can't jump. It's okay to recognize that athletes from Africa will run faster and jump higher than athletes from Europe. But you can't say in the opposite, you know. There's never been a movie, Black Men Can't Calculate. You could never, ever, ever. And it would be wrong to say. I'm not saying it's true, but I'm just saying, like, just think of it in the reverse. It's okay to have a movie, White Men Can't Jump, but it would be not okay to have it the other way. So, and I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm not saying, I want to just point that out. Right. I'm on tape. I want to be clear that I don't mean it as a prejudice thing. I'm just saying you can't say it the other way. You can't say that Jews are privileged in knowledge, you can't. But you see it in history. We've been maligned. This is one of Rabbi Mati Berger's things that he's pointed out or that I learned from him. You could say anything about the Jews, that they started AIDS in Africa, that they experimented on people, that they masterminded the Twin Towers, that they poisoned the worlds of Europe, that they started the Black Plague, right? You could say anything, but you can't say Jews are stupid, because that's just not believable.
All
right? So that's Monty Berger. I'm just quoting him. But to say that there's something special about the Jews, even though history sees it, we Jews today, we human beings today, we Westerners, we Americans, are very uncomfortable with any group being special. You know, we're all special. So, right. Mark Twain for sure has got lots of quotes, yeah. He has lots of quotes on it. But we Jews are particularly uncomfortable with that thought. So what does the Reshit mean? So let's look a little bit at Rav Hirsch. Let's see. So it's a long article, but it's a very important article. I'll see if I could summarize a little bit. It's definitely worth the read. I recommend you take it home and read it and digest it, because we can't talk about all of it. But but this is a very, very fundamental, important concept. Bereshit means that the world is created something from nothing. And it must be created something from nothing. Because, and I just learned this yesterday from Rav Hirsch, I never, ever really contemplated it before. I'll read a little bit. Skip the first sentence, because that's a grammatical thing which I don't fully understand, which we could get to. So, hence, with the word hence. Hence, Reshit means the beginning of a movement, a beginning in time, never in space. A beginning in space is called, like its end, katse, for they are both extremities, which, according to the way one looks at them, may be considered the beginning or the end. So that Reshit, etc., means in the beginning of all coming into existence, So we have the in the beginning of, right? Bereshit means in the beginning of all coming into existence. It was God who created, or taking in connection with the two objects that follow. At the very beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. In any case, Bereshit expresses the fact that nothing preceded God's creation. The heaven and the earth came into existence solely by the creation of God. This affirms creation out of nothing, yesh mi'ayin, a fact that forms the foundation stone of the understanding which God's Torah wishes to build up in us. So this is a very important philosophic concept we're about to hit. The contrary belief, that matter always existed and only ascribes to the Creator, remember he's writing before people were atheists. But this is a contrary belief, that matter always existed and only ascribes to the Creator a formative function, which is equally the foundation stone of heathen conception up to this very day, is not only a metaphysical lie which has robbed the theories of mankind as to the origin of the world of the truth, i.e. of agreement with actuality, but is a much further reaching pernicious detail of all freedom of will
denial.
Much further reaching pernicious denial of all freedom of will in God and man, which undermines all morality. So this concept of God created everything, yesh mi'ayin, is the foundation of all morality. Why? If the material was there, was given to the world framer, he could only make the best possible thing out of the material that was there, but not the absolute best world. Only the best from what he could, from what was there. All physical and moral evil would then unavoidably lie in the imperfection of the material. God himself could not save the world from either physical or moral evil. Man could as little be master of his body as God of the material of the world. Freedom would be absent from the world. Blind, pitiless necessity would rule the world together with its God and its men. The first word of the teaching of God, of which in truth it can be said, Ptach devarecha ya'ir, so that's from Psalms, open up your words and see, dispels at once this comfortless conception of God, the world and mankind. Bereshit bara Elokim, in the beginning God created, hereby all that follows stands or falls. Everything, all material, all forms, everything existing has sprung from the completely free, almighty creative will of God. Still, today the Creator rules completely freely over the material and form of all creatures, over the forces that work in matter, over the laws that govern that working, and over the resulting forms, for it is his free almighty will that created the matter, that embedded the forces which work within it, and his law which governs the result. And he ruled free-willed over his world. He could invest man, in whom he had breathed a spark of his own free-willed nature, by the spark, with free will over his small world, free-willed disposition of his body and its forces, and could place him to be a free-willed likeness of the free-willed God, in a world governed by his all might. The Bereshit of the world created by God is not the best possible, but the actual best. With all its seeming evils, it corresponds to the plans of the wisdom of its Creator, who could have created it otherwise if such had been more in accordance with his will. Man created by God at Bereshit has, with all his moral imperfections, the ability to be adequate in the highest degree of moral perfection to the moral ideal set before him by his Creator. The possibility of his failing to do so itself is part of his moral completion. More, it is the fundamental condition for his moral freedom of will. So, does it say this here? Let me just read it and I'll see before I comment here. Both the world and man will achieve the highest goal of goodness for which both were created. For the God who has placed this goal before them created him, and by his almighty, absolutely unhindered free will for this goal. He would have created them otherwise if it would have been more conducive to the goal he set out for his own free will. This is a fact that we constantly call ever afresh to our minds in Kiddush, in which we express the conviction that his great name will surely win recognition and sanctification in a world, Devara Kireutia.